the webinar, William Suk will give us a brief interview of the Superfund Research Program and introduce this session. William Suk is the director of both the Hazardous Substance Research Branch and the Superfund Research Program in the NIHS Division of Extramural Research and Training. He served in this role since its inception as a director of the NIH Superfund Research Program, a program established by Congress as part of the reauthorization of Superfund in 1986 that fosters interdisciplinary research approaches to address the problems associated with potentially hazardous environmental exposures. He received his PhD in microbiology from George Washington University Medical School and his master's in public health and health policy from the School of Public Health at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And with that, Bill, I will take it over to you.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate it. I hope everybody can hear me. I'm really very well pleased that you're all able to join us today. I think that these seminars are really interesting and exciting, and I'm going to go through a few slides just to bring people up to speed on the program. So this next slide, the primary objective of the Superfund Research Program, the NIEHS Superfund Research Program. The NIEHS is an institute of the National Institutes of Health. The program funds university-based multidisciplinary research on human health and environmental issues related to hazardous substances. The central goal is to understand and break the link between chemical exposure and disease. The program's primary objectives are seen in the little bubbles that are in front of you, but essentially they are development of methods and technologies to detect hazardous substances in the environment, a development of advanced techniques for the detection, assessment, and evaluation of the effects on human health of hazardous substances, the development of methods to assess the risks to human health presented by hazardous substances, and a very unique fourth mandate, which is the development of basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances. So those are the four mandates that were laid out for us by Congress back under the Superfund Amendments and Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act of 1986, and the program started in 1987. So this next slide shows the opportunities for data integration and data sharing. And the map, this map of publications from the Superfund research programs shows all publications distributed based on the journals that the work was published in. This diversity of research across the science spectrum helps to illustrate the diversity of data being generated by this program. Superfund research program grantees are working in a variety of fields, again, going back to the mandates that I just cited, from chemistry and basic biology research, earth science research, medical research, to social science research, et cetera, et cetera. Since the SRP has been around since 1987, there's also a wealth of historical data that needs to be tapped into. This huge diversity of data, including historical data, presents an opportunity for the SRP. By integrating all of these types of data and sharing them across the different disciplines and research projects, we will be able, because I'm very positive about this and confident that we can do it, we will be able to better answer important questions related to reducing exposures and the burden of disease, and thereby improving public health, human health. The diversity within the program is a strength, and it presents an opportunity to take advantage of new resources and broaden data availability to researchers. So, as we're looking at this, these are some of the questions that I think need to be addressed. Here we are having this webinar series to begin the conversation about how we might address some of these questions that are listed here on this slide. These are just a few questions that we need to address to begin moving toward integrating data. These questions emphasize the need for data sharing, which is an NIH priority. Data sharing is essential for expediting translation of research results into knowledge to improve human health. So, in the first session of this webinar series, we heard some of the National Institutes of Health big data initiatives and some grantees that are managing a wide variety of data. We've had a talk by a gentleman from our program. We also had input and webinar by individuals who are supported by NOAA and NASA. Today, we will hear primarily about the National Science Foundation initiatives related to big data. We want to look at NSF because they are capturing more than just health data and have a number of initiatives to support research that fosters broad interdisciplinary collaborations and helps to develop and maintain cutting-edge national computing and information infrastructure for research and education. Kaiten Baru is a senior advisor of data science in the Computer and Information Science and Engineering Directorate of the National Science Foundation, and he will discuss NSF's initiatives in big data. Ilya Zalowski is an SRP grantee at the University of California, San Diego. Also has NSF-funded projects that enable data discovery and facilitate sharing of research and expertise, which he will highlight today. As is the case with any well-planned event, unfortunately, Dr. Baru is not able to kick off the webinar today. However, he will join us the last 30 minutes of the webinar. So I am going to give a quick introduction about NSF programs for Kaiten. We will then hear from our second speaker, Ilya, and Kaiten will join us at 3:30 for a short presentation elaborating on the initiatives, because I don't work for NSF, he does, and I really appreciate him being able to alter his calendar and his schedule to accommodate this activity. Okay, so bear with me while I go through the Dr. Baru's slides. Okay, so from an NSF perspective, NSF funds basic research to promote the science of to promote the progress of science, to advance the national health and priority and prosperity and welfare, and to secure the national defense. Okay? So this is the overall perspective that NSF has, and it really is an outstanding organization as far as I'm concerned. NSF's big data science investment strategy, these are the four areas that they have laid out with regards to how they are dealing with essentially a presidential directive. Fundamental research to develop new techniques and technologies to derive knowledge from data. New cyber infrastructure to manage, curate, and serve data to research communities. Development of new approaches for education and workforce development, and the development of new types of interdisciplinary collaboration and community building, all of these leading to a better understanding about how big data is going to fit within the context of policy. So programs that they have with related to big data. The Directorate for Computer and Information Science and Engineering has four goals. They are to enable the U.S. to uphold a position of world leadership in computing, communications, and information science and engineering. They are to promote understanding of the principles and uses of advanced computing, communications, and information systems in service to society. They are to support and provide advanced cyber infrastructure to enable and accelerate discovery and innovation across all disciplines. And they are to contribute to universal, transparent, and affordable participation in an information-based society. To achieve these, CISE supports investigator-initiated research in all areas of computer and information science and engineering. It fosters broad interdisciplinary collaboration, helps develop and maintain cutting-edge national computing and information infrastructure for research and education, and contributes to the development of a computer and information technology workforce with skills essential for success in the increasingly competitive global market. There are also several examples in other directorates or fields of research at NSF. For example, in the Directorate for Biological Sciences, or BIO, they recently funded projects to enable innovative biological research and foster collaborations that leverage data. The NSF also has cross-directorate activities, which encompass a collection of foundation-wide activities that provide for infrastructure improvement. One example is the Big Data Program. The Big Data Program, and that's all one word, so it's not two words, Big Data, it's Big Data Program, seeks novel approaches in computer science, statistics, computational science, and mathematics, along with innovative applications in domain science, including social and behavioral sciences, geosciences, education, biology, the physical sciences, and engineering, that leads towards the further development of the interdisciplinary field of data science. An example of a program that spans a number of directorates is EarthCube. Again, it's all one word, EarthCube, which you will hear about from Ilya Zelosky, our next presenter. Kaitan Baru will also go into more depth of some of these programs when he presents at the end of the webinar. Some of the issues or some of the areas that NSF has is represented in this next slide, I guess it's number 10, that talks about the different types of data integration issues that they are dealing with and that Dr. Kaitan will talk about when he comes back on after his meeting with the director of NSF. So with that, let me make sure. Yes, one more slide on NSF. Obviously, there'll be more to come at the end. And if you have any questions, you obviously can go on the NSF website for all of this. And you can also email Dr. Baru. Now, the thing is this. We are now going to move on to this with this webinar. I think you can get a sense as to why the Superfund Research Program is reaching out and engaging the National Science Foundation, as well as NASA and NOAA and other parts of the federal government. I personally feel that the Superfund Research Program sits between the omics-related research, the health-related research that is the mainstay of NIH, and the environmental science and engineering that is the mainstay of NSF. So as we move forward in integrating data across from different areas of research in order to do essentially the one thing that we're required to do, what we want to do, and that is to reduce exposures and reduce the burden of disease and improve people's health. And with that, I will turn it back over to Michelle.
Michelle,
can you mute yourself? Yep, I know there's a little lag time between muting and unmuting.
Okay, let's see. Did it work yet?
Yep.
Yeah, you're on. You're
great,
on.
Thank you. Bill, you did a great job standing in for Chaitan. You did him proud, I'm sure. So, Bill, what you're going to hear now is you're going to hear a presentation from Ilya Seslavsky. He's going to touch about some of the NSF areas of research that Bill just talked about. Ilya is the director of the Spatial Information Systems Laboratory at University of California, San Diego. His research focuses on distributed information management systems, in particular on spatial and temporal data integration, geographic information systems, and spatial data analysis. Ilya has been leading design and technical development in several cyber infrastructure projects. He has also developed spatial data management infrastructure as part of several large projects in domains ranging from neuroscience, geology, disaster response, to regional planning and conservation. Ilya received his PhD from the University of Washington for research on statistical analysis and reasoning models for geographic data. Previously, he received a PhD equivalent from the Russian Academy of Sciences Institute of Geography for his work on urban simulation modeling and metropolitan evolution. Before joining UC San Diego, he was on the faculty at Western Michigan University and worked as a GIS staff scientist at San Diego State University, developing software for online mapping and exploratory social data analysis. He also developed one of the first XML-based online mapping systems called AxioMap. And Ilya is also very flexible, and he's been very gracious to alter his presentation to accommodate our last-minute change with Chaitan's last-minute meeting. So I will, with that, Ilya, I will leave it up to you.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay, thank you very much, Michelle, and thank you, Bill, for a wonderful introduction. I will mostly talk about projects funded by NSF and EarthCube that was mentioned already. These projects focus on cyber infrastructure development in fields that are close to interests of SRP, mostly on geoscience, environmental science side, and I mostly focused on technology, and this is what I do every day. So putting community building as a subtitle on this slide is not something I do too often, but the experience of this project that I'm going to talk about shows that managing and engaging users, building community, understanding organizations involved, interests of different groups, their readiness to cooperate and to adopt new approaches and convergence on common standards, this is much more critical than brilliant technological solutions. And we have found that in multiple projects again and again. I'm very glad that data sharing is now firmly on the SRP agenda. And again, thanks to Bill and Michelle for inviting me to speak today. Different communities come to realizing this vision at different times. And this is a sign that there are already significant resources and expertise already developed in SRP, and that advantages of pulling together these resources to solve new problems at a larger scale, address challenges more efficiently with less duplication, these now outweigh the additional development effort that is needed to put the data sharing system in place. I also want to acknowledge UCSD SRP program, in particular Bob Tukey and Keith Pizzoli. I've been involved in SRP for almost 15 years now, mostly on the side of research translation and community engagement, with online mapping, GIS data analysis, visualization, analysis of surveys. But in my other work, which is close to 90% of my time, my focus has been primarily on large-scale data integration, data sharing projects in several domains. Before I talk about them, I'd like to point to goals of SRP data sharing as I understand them, and that looks very close to what Bill presented at the beginning of his talk. One goal is to have a one-stop data discovery and reuse. This is something that would make the process much more efficient. For we well know that analysis of water or soil samples or other samples done with an SRP may be very expensive. So if these data are available for use in other research contexts, that would be very, very good and would make the whole process more efficient. It would be a shame to, you know, if the results of this analysis would be used only once. Also, cross-SRP data integration may lead not only to better efficiency, but also to the ability to do meta-analysis, compare results obtained by different groups at different SRP sites, involve experts from other sites, and generally to address problems that could not be addressed by a single research group. Of course, collaborations across sites do exist and are getting increasingly stronger, but if we have formal ways to share data and expertise, that would essentially add a new channel for discovery and communication, not relying on just word of mouth and interaction via papers and conferences. Finally, the system would be fairly lightweight, non-intrusive, and not altering successful practices that have been established before, because the worst thing that can be done with any data sharing project is to try to convince stakeholders to do things in a different way. That usually does not work. There are several critical questions that we need to have, that we need to answer before we actually get to the meat of it. What kind of data are we talking about sharing, and why do we want to share data? So essentially, what are the use cases and the research scenarios that we would want to explore that would maximize, will demonstrate that the benefits of data sharing, because that will be important for funding agencies, and it will be very important to make this effort sustainable. So the projects that I'm going to talk about, this is certainly not an exhaustive list of projects that deal with data sharing. There are certainly many more, and they focus on different technology patterns. They have different perspectives on how to do data integration. They work in different domains. And here I will talk only about those where I've been either PI or co-PI and have been heavily involved in technical design. So EarthCube is the first one that was already mentioned, and we'll start with that. This is a large-scale NSF initiative. It is not a single project. There are maybe close to 30 different projects funded under EarthCube. And the goal is to develop a uniform cyber infrastructure that geoscientists can use. The problem is that there are about 200 scientists, geoscientists in the U.S., and they are not involved in data sharing on a day-to-day basis. A lot of data end up on computer hard disks and are never reused, and that is one of the major sources of inefficiency. So the idea is to advance Earth system science by bringing more data together to provide simple and easy access to data and information that is being collected and analyzed and processed by many different research groups across the country. to provide seamless connection to tools and services and have a development that will be community-driven, so that there should be a mechanism for figuring out what current community needs are and have the technology infrastructure set up such that it would be tunable, customizable to the current needs. This is a joint project across several directorates. GEO and ACI, Advanced Cyber Infrastructure, are involved most closely, but other directorates are quite interested, including BIO. At SDSC, we have several projects funded through this program. One is called Community Inventory of Earthcube Resources for Geoscience Interoperability, or Synergy. The idea here is that we have lots of metadata catalogs and data collections that are being developed by researchers across the country. It would be good to have a one-stop view over these different types of collections so that you can search all of them from one place, and you can also see if the data that you find would fit for your purpose. I will talk a little bit more about that project, but this is just one of the facets of this very large data integration agenda, how you do efficiently data discovery across multiple fields that deal with different conventions, different semantics that have different data types, and so on. GEAR is another project, Geoscience Enterprise Architecture for Research. That's an attempt to conceptualize the development of EarthCube as a social technical system that should evolve with the development of technology and evolve with the development of research agendas. And a few other examples. Digital Crust is a project that looks at the integration of data about subsurface. Imagine that you also have a lot of data coming from different types of measurements that could be wells, boreholes, geologic maps, a bunch of other data, and they all provide a picture of subsurface with different resolution and with different spatial precision. So how can we combine all this data into a comprehensive picture? Geo Web Services, GeoWS, is a project that deals with services that would allow you to access data in different repositories. Let's say you are trying to do a cross-disciplinary project and you're looking at integrating data from hydrology, seismology, geochemistry, marine biology, and others. All of these systems have established catalogs and some sort of unified databases, but the way you can access them is very different. So this project is trying to create a common service signatures that would allow you to use fairly standardized spatial temporal queries to retrieve this data. And AIDA Alliance, I'll mention that a little bit later, that's a project that tries to establish, to see how different building block projects can come together to support a community of users in solid earth sciences. If we look at EarthCube at a very high level, what could be a model? That's a fairly, I would say, common model. You have three tiers at least. You have research sites where the actual research is being done, data are being produced. Often these data end up in domain information systems. For example, with NSF funding, there have been systems established for sharing hydrologic data, for sharing geochemical data. There's NCAR that deals with sharing atmospheric science data. And many domains have such systems. Some domains have not. The problem is that in each domain it is done differently. So in order to enable cross-domain integration layer, all of these systems would have to expose what they have in a somewhat in some standard manner, so that you can build you can do integration. And one way to look at it is, if you want to reuse data from another domain, you need to be able to find this data, to interpret this data, access it and integrate it with your other data, which these four expectations translate into four components of such a system. Catalogs to support data discovery, vocabularies to support data understanding of semantics, archives and services to support data access, and formal information models or community data models to support connecting your schemas, your representations of the data with other types of data. So this is a very high level view of what an domain information system may contain, and if we want to enable cross-domain integration, then let's say if vocabularies are available through standard services, then you can develop vocabulary crosswalks so that you would query across different data systems using the same term. This term would be translated into terms that are understood by each individual system. If you have different catalogs in different systems that support the same catalog interface, then it would be possible to formulate a single data discovery query, and that query would work across multiple systems, and so on. So there will be some services that will need to exist at the cross-domain level, and currently these services are in the domain of research projects. Domain systems is what is being supported by various facility funding and other large-scale funding through NSF, but what exists in the cross-domain in the tier is does not yet have the consistent governance or any long-term sustainability plans. And of course, this picture is missing people, so there are geoscientists that are currently outside that picture, but ideally they would need to be engaged in exploring available resources, creating and using resources and connecting the dots, and providing feedback as to how the system operates. So at a very high level, that could be used as a sort of a model for a range of, I wouldn't say for all, but for a range of domain information systems or cross-domain information systems that are being developed with NSF funding and without the funding. So EarthCube, as I said, is a collection of multiple projects. One of them deals with governance because you have multiple stakeholders and multiple project streams, and they all need to somehow connect. So there are several phases of governance. There are projects that are specifically focused on organizing community. This is so-called RCNs, or Research Coordination Network projects, where funding at the level of about 300K is given to community groups that organize workshops, working groups, and develop consensus within the community as to what are the needs, cyber infrastructure needs that are important for that specific community. Building blocks are projects that deal some components of the infrastructure, and there are three conceptual design projects that have been funded that tries to come up with the model of the architecture for the entire system. We are currently after that first phase, and where several building blocks are ending, and they will be the basis for developing more larger systems that would be funded under prototype development and refined design. As I said, community engagement is one of the most critical parts. So NSF, in the second year of the project and in the third year, funded about 30 end-user workshops that included 2,500 participants from multiple universities and agencies, and covering the entire gamut of interests represented in GEO. There were also surveys. I will show you a survey because, partly because we developed the software to publish surveys online, and this is a very fun way to look at survey results. So contrary to the common way of analyzing surveys, here you have a very different visual metaphor. You don't have tables, you have respondents that you can you can see how they're distributed by any of the variables. They can be color-coded based on what they represent. So for example, in this case, we have green for geoscience users, or geoscientists answering the survey, computer science people, those who specify that they're both computer science and geoscience, and so on. Questions in the surveys related to what kind of data you use, how easy it is for you to use data from other domains, how often you communicate with other with people from other domains. So for example, if we're looking at biologists and ecosystem science, I'm trying to choose some examples where we have topics that are related to SRP interests more closely. So that would be a distribution of responses on how often respondents talk to biologists and ecosystem scientists. And of course, you would hypothesize that that would be different for people with different specialty. So there's another question about my primary role. And you would see that, for example, among geologists, the distribution is different. Mostly people never talk to biologists. It's even worse than atmospheric science people. But biologists or ecosystem scientists, of course, talk to their peers all the time. Something like that would be very interesting to do for different subdomains that exist within SRP to see what are the real connections between between different groups of researchers and what kinds of data they use, what are the attitudes to let's say security versus ease of access. There was a question about security, I believe, as well. How should EarthCube balance cybersecurity and ease of access? And you can see responses to that as well. The strong preference is to towards the ease of access, but that's geoscience. It may be quite different in the SRP domain. The tool that I'm using here is called SWAV. It stands for Survey Analysis Via Visual Exploration. And at the end of the PowerPoint, there are actually a collection of links that would let you explore all the demos that I'm showing here. Let's going back. Trying to summarize the principles behind EarthCube, it is funded by NSF, so all the projects need to demonstrate how they advance science. A critical requirement is that needs of geoscientists need to be matched with technical capabilities and expertise. Currently, there is no specific matching platform where there will be an inventory of technical capabilities and perhaps an inventory or a list of user needs and expectations. Such things does not exist, but this is where EarthCube is going, at least on the side of inventory of resources and collecting use cases from multiple domains. It has to be evolutionary because the system is planned to be the development phases for about 10 years, and then it's supposed to work at least for another 10 or 20 years. So through that timeline, research designs and technology will change drastically. How we design a system that will not have to be drastically changed with these changes, but rather evolve and build on an existing platform. The problem is that there are already a lot of things developed. As I mentioned, there are domain information systems in multiple fields. But the problem is that components of these infrastructures are kind of baked in the system, so they're not made sufficiently modular, and it does not typically if you want to build a system that will include components from multiple subsystems, it would be very difficult to do because they are not developed in a modular fashion. Some other principles have a community ownership model, and community governance have the system sustainable, such that these cross-domain resources that I pointed to on one of the earlier slides have a defined life cycle, and they may, and people may rely on them for being available for their additional work. The overall vision is that it will be a system of systems. There are multiple systems already exist, as I mentioned, and NSF does not want to throw that investment away, but rather build on top of it and create an integration layer that would allow you to take the best advantage of what exists. One of the projects that I mentioned that we have funded under that initiative is called Synergy. And the project tries to integrate catalogs from different domains. So imagine that you have catalogs that come from geochemistry, hydrology, ocean science, seismology, and other fields. In addition, there are several community groups funded by through the RCN mechanism that also develop collections of resources that they use. And if you want to have a one-stop discovery site where you would want to go, where you would want to search across all these different catalogs, that may be possible if you either harvest information from all these catalogs in one place, or you develop interfaces over these other catalogs such that you can query them at runtime. But if you do that, and we've done that, of course, as a first step, you very quickly end up with a total mess, because different catalogs and different domains have different semantics, they have different data types, they even if they follow similar metadata descriptions, they would emphasize different fields and have different conventions about what is important and what needs to be filled out. So we harvested about 50,000 records and then decided to stop and develop a system that would process all of these metadata streams and convert them to something that would be more manageable. So what we have now is a set of adapters that connect to different catalogs, harvest metadata, put this in a staging database in MongoDB, and then apply a series of data enhancement tools that will take a metadata record, see what is missing, and try to add keywords, add spatial extent, and add semantic references so that we know where these keywords came from. And then we republish that information so that it can be searched across across domain in a standard format. So what we have is a common enhancer API so that other people can also develop their own enhancement tools. We have each of the improvements that is done to metadata record is recorded as provenance. And provenance, by the way, is one of the key things when you try to integrate information. You often try to figure out where the data come from, and when you downloaded it from some source or made some changes to it, this information quickly gets lost. What we try to do here is to explicitly record everything that we do with every metadata document, and this information is available with that document. So for each document, we try to specify. We try to detect what variables it deals with, what materials it covers, what processes are described, what equipment has been used, methods, what features have been described here, let's say hydrologic features or physiographic features, what science domain it belongs to, and so on. And Once that is done automatically, we end up with a bunch of keywords automatically assigned to each document, and each keyword is accompanied by a reference to an ontology in which it is found. So altogether, we have about 60 different ontology fragments that hook into our umbrella ontology, and these cover environmental science and chemistry and ontology of instruments and from different organizations and so on. And in addition, we also automatically assign spatial extent based on place names that were found in the description. So this information is given to a curator, and curator can check which of these assignments are correct or incorrect, and that goes into machine learning so that our subsequent harvests from that same source are processed with the additional benefit of information that we learned from manual curation. This is another project called Critical Zone Observatories. And this may be in scope somewhat more similar to SRP. There are 11 highly instrumented sites across the country. Critical zone is spans from the bedrock to lower atmosphere, and the focus is studying processes on the Earth's surface that involve biogeochemical processes, hydrologic processes, vegetation, soils, and all of that. So there are altogether 16 subdomains of geoscience that are involved in this work. There are 11 sites. In each of these sites, there are researchers with multiple backgrounds. And the task is how you would create a one-stop shop for these different types of data and different types of research that is being developed in, at site, how to make this available for search, discovery, and integration. I will show you a system. So if you click on this link, you will get to the website, and you can find data that is organized by CCO websites, by CCO sites, and also by disciplines. So for example, if we're looking for biogeochemistry, that will be a set of data sets found here, and we can, for each of them, we can look at what is being described here, and also navigate to location of that data so that it can be retrieved. And now we have jumped to a different system that allows users from these 11 sites to submit whatever data sets that they have created. And in fact, the search portal just harvests all the information from here and organizes this in a way that allows for cross-domain faceted search. Of course, when you deal with multi-disciplinary system like that, it doesn't make sense, and it's really impossible to create information systems that will cover, or create a large information system that will cover all possible data types that are being used. So leveraging what exists in other domains is the key here. Open topography is one such system, and that's, by the way, one of the systems that Chaitan Baru started, who will speak later, that deals with LiDAR data, and it's a nationwide system that provides access to a lot of public LiDAR information and also allows you to trade LiDAR in multiple formats. So for all CCOs, we have LiDAR information now that is managed through that system, not through the system that is being developed with NSF funding specifically for CCO. We just federate with Open Topography so that our search interface can search both our system and Open Topography system. Same is with QASI. QASI stands for Consortium of Universities for the Advancement of Hydrologic Science, Inc. That's a nonprofit that is funded by NSF to kind of organize universities that are working on hydrologic issues. And through that project, we have developed a system called Quasi-Hydrologic Information System that I will talk about later. EarthCam is focuses on geochemistry, and somewhat more recent additions to that are KBase and iMicrobe that is being that now has camera data. These are this is genomics data that is closer to what SRP is working on. The way to bring together the system is to use well-defined information models. Once each of the systems has a well-defined data structure and semantics, then we can connect elements of data elements from this system with what researchers in CCO need. If the systems have standard services, then we can also integrate them in our system. Formal semantics definitely helps because then it can be mapped to semantics used by scientists in the critical zone. Of course, it would be impossible to create semantics that would be shared across multiple domains, but at least if we have a way to express community-specific semantics ontologies in a formal way, then there will be a way to map different terms. Another project that I just mentioned that was highly successful because after 5 year development, it was converted by 5 year development as a research project. It was converted into a facility by NSF. So now it is managed. This information is managed by so-called Water Data Center of QASI. The project tries to integrate hydrologic information from multiple different sources of data. There are currently more than 100 registered water data services. Partly the services come from large agencies such as U.S. Geological Survey, EPA, National Climate Data Center, USDA, and other data streams come from universities that install so-called Hydra service, that is software stack that we have developed that one can download and install and use to serve hydrologic data in a standard format. Then this information is harvested, metadata is harvested in so-called HIS Central application that compiles a large catalog of hydrologic time series. And currently this catalog has about 2,600 measured properties. Now, these are not variables, these are measured properties because the number of variables is actually much larger because of semantic differences. The same thing can be called stream flow and discharge, but they would map to the same measured property. the project has been successful in several ways. It's now kind of the go-to place that hydrologists go to grab data. It references a lot of about 400 plus billion data values that can be retrieved via standard set of services. There is a fairly easy way to join the system. You just install Hydra Survey and start serving data in this format. The situation that this project tried to address has been fairly common. So if you are trying to get flow data, the usual way to do that would be to call someone who you think may have this data. So virtually you get on the phone and talk with somebody named Don in this case. The Don answers and says, I've got one site, I'll send it through. Some time has passed, so then data is being sent to the requester. In this case, when I show it as PowerPoint, No, not via shared screen. This really looks like dark data because there's not much explanation that comes with it. And of course, after some time, there are additional questions. I got the data, where is the site located? What are the coordinates of the site? What reference system is being used? And this is where answers may not be as easy to come up with. What sensor is used? It's calculated from the stream gauge reading using a rating curve. There, of course, can be many different rating curves used. What kind of rating curves and what is the accuracy of that? And questions about accuracy. Quite often are conversation stoppers. So this is a slide from Australia. I wouldn't claim that this situation happens in Australia, but this problem has been actually recognized in many different parts of the world and resulted in a development of creation of so-called hydrology working group that tried to develop common international standards for sharing water data. Such a standard, WaterML 2.0, was developed several years, 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, and it has been voted as OGC international standard. OGC stands for Open Geospatial Consortium. That's a group that develops standards for sharing spatial data, and hopefully next year it will be recommended by WMO as WMO standard. The standard takes its origins from the project that I just pointed to, because the way to have all these different data sources being accessible in the same manner was to create a standard called Watermark Up Language 1, which defined the semantics and structure of responses to questions such as give me data sites that in a particular area, describe these measurement locations, provide structured representation of time series, and so on. So that has been a very successful standard, I would say, because it was adopted by USGS. Now you can get USGS water data in this format. It was adopted by National Climate Data Center and a few other agencies and a lot of university groups. And eventually became one of the foundations for the standard that became international lingua franca in hydrology. Now an example from a totally different field, sharing brain atlas data. And the situation is, again, quite similar. You have multiple atlases of the brain. In this case, we're talking about rodent brain because that's what the project was about. These different atlases are collections of slices, histology, MRI, fMRI, and other types of data. They are developed quite independently from one another. If you want to ask a query such as, give me information about gene expression in that part of the brain, or where else in which other atlas have I seen distribution of signal that is similar to what I see in my slice, you would not be able to answer that because different atlases did not share common coordinate system. And, well, not to mention that semantics and naming used in nomenclatures used in different atlases have been also different. What we try to do is to come up with this standard framework that will at least allow you to answer spatial queries based on location in the brain and develop a set of services that would allow you to integrate atlases such as Allen Brain Atlas and Paxinus Atlas, a copy of which we ran here, of mouse brain, Edinburgh Mouse Atlas Project, and also allow researchers register their slices to these common standard coordinate systems. So as a result, you would be able to, for any location in the brain, you would be able to ask how that location was named in different atlases, or retrieve information from other atlases that was hooked to that location. For example, you would be able to find gene distribution returned in the AGEA atlas. AGEA stood for Allen Gene Expression Atlas. Retrieve correlation maps, find images that are registered to some other atlas so that you can compare them with your own images. And do some other operations that would essentially allow you to integrate data that were previously not possible to integrate that would be attached to different atlases. So far I talked about sharing data, but of course we want to do something more. There are other types of resources that people want to share. Maybe you there are some unique devices that are available in one SRP sites and not available at others. There may be some unique data collections or physical samples or other types of resources that are not quite in digital form. As I mentioned, we are working with RCNs and RCNs research coordination networks within EarthCube. One way for them to share data is to share resources is to compile inventories of what's available. So this is a spreadsheet developed that describes resources available in ECOGEO project. ECOGEO stands for EarthCube Oceanography and Geobiology and Environmental Omics. So they deal with metagenomics information and similar types of data. And it is Google spreadsheet, so it's very easy for community members to go in and fill out the information. And we also express this data in a format that is similar to what I showed you before. With surveys now, this is a view of a catalog of information, a view of catalog of resources that is available across, that is available to this community. So you can look at these resources in many different ways. You can sort them by type. So in this case, we're sorting them by looking at catalogs, collections, data sets, desktop applications and software and so on. If you are interested in certain specific types of data, let's say, we are looking at metagenomics resources. Or genomics resources in general. Maybe I should search here instead. There are some metagenomics resources here, or we can look at metagenomics and genomics resources on this view, and for each icon, we would have some description of what it is, and also a link to URL that you can go to for more information. This is one of the first steps that SRP may want to do to come up with an inventory of resources used across the community, and since everybody understands how to work with Google spreadsheet and this type of view is generated automatically, it would be fairly simple to set up. So we also do this for other RCNs, and then information entered by community members is processed through Synergy Pipeline and end up searchable through Synergy Portal as well. Another thing that we want to share is expertise, because you have unique research expertise in different SRP sites. And it may not be obvious from just list of resources or names of projects. what I have here on the left side is a directory of critical zone observatory members that includes researchers and graduate students and technicians and everybody who are involved. There are about 400 people, I believe, across 11 sites. This is all available for search, and when we talked with Bill and Michelle earlier, after that I created a similar system for by just scribing pictures, photographs of NIHS people. Hello, it should. Let's see. Okay, yeah. So we have faces here, and you can look at the faces. You can also see how NIHS expertise is distributed by, let's say, primary work areas. So that would be people who are engaged in signal transduction, genome integrity and structure. Yeah, I need to sort this by primary work area. So that is a way to expose what is available. Imagine that we would have it across different SRP sites. That would really make it easier to figure out who is doing what and perhaps find collaborations. Ideally, we want to bring this all together so that we have expertise that is hooked to specific projects, hooked to data and model outputs and methods, and that will create a much more coherent network of different types of resources that would be searchable. So it will kind of go in beyond just searching for data, but searching for everything that may be related. How am I doing on time? I try to fill up some time, I can show you a few more examples of how we use visualization in SRP at UCSD. There are a few examples. For example, I know that many of you are doing surveys. This is a survey of health and hygiene and healthcare in Mexico. You can search for, let's say, describe your health. That would be an interesting variable to look at, and that's distribution of respondents by how they answered that question. Either health is very good, or good, or so-so, poor, and very poor. And you can see how different features of the household or some environmental features affect this distribution. So, for example, if you have, let's say, waste. There was a question about how is waste water drains into the public drain system. If the answer is no, then you would see that you would see how the pattern of distribution is different. You have a lot more people who say that their health is so-so, and less people who say very good and good. And there are also numeric estimates, percentages that you can compute for the overall distribution and for distribution in context. Another example is, and this is very recent, so there will be more sites added here, but these are the sites where some there was measurements of certain pollutants. You can look at distributions of values for any site, and you can also look at the photographs of each site. And for example, you want to find sites that are bad on both lead and copper, And you would see that one side is particularly has high values on both. You can zoom in and see, aha, this is close to highway. This may be the reason. So it's a way to explore data with a map view, with a view of images, with metadata analysis all together, so you can slice and dice it in many different ways. And this is also a fairly easy tool for people to understand how to work with, so we are using that in classes and in community engagement. So I have just a couple summary slides. some lessons that we learned from these different projects. When we developed data sharing solutions, they must be immediately useful even before we can declare that this became a community norm. If it's not useful, then it's very difficult to argue for the project to be sustained. Community building and understanding of use cases is critical, and that's why EarthCube and Critical Zone and other projects such as Hydrological Information System put a lot of effort into organizing users, asking them what is important for them, what they would tolerate in terms of additional effort for that they put into describing data and make data public. Visualization is critical. Whatever we develop must be supportive of careers, because everybody that we work with are extremely busy people, especially early career. If they see this work as a total destruction that kind of takes them away from their immediate career goals, tenure, and things like that, then it's not going to work. Social issues and organization generally trump any technical concerns. You can have a brilliant solution, but a technical solution, but it will not work if people are not sufficiently engaged. And they will get engaged if it will be very clear and super easy for both users and data publishers to join the system. And another lesson is that when we try to build large systems like that, a lot already exists. So we don't want to redo things completely. We want to wrap existing functions, existing functionality in a way that would make it accessible to much wider set of users, much wider set of use cases. These are three and four discussion mostly. Some of the first steps that a project that I've been involved in have taken, and this may be something that SRP may be interested in considering, and this is some low-hanging fruit in my opinion. Having an initial inventory of projects, data sets, and participants, all SRP sites have already something in place. They have websites, they have a set of projects. Bringing this all together would be a first step in establishing a common view of what is going on, and making this searchable, and attaching eventually data sets and expertise and people to this information. Collecting use cases, perhaps starting with two, three use case scenarios that show how sharing data across different SRP sites would be beneficial for making it more efficient and less time-consuming to do some routine tasks, but also doing something that could not be done before. Figuring out who stakeholders are and plan for that community engagement is also a very critical thing. How we determine what we want to do and how much effort we want to spend on it, that's the phase that most projects are going through continuously, so it is actually quite difficult to determine upfront. But if we have a timeline and kind of set of goals in mind, and with increasing scope or and the company deliverables, that would be very useful. One interesting starting point would be to have a questionnaire that will, or some way to collect information about what different groups have to share, what types and formats they use, what kind of bottlenecks they feel exists, what would be resources and data from other SRP sites you would be interested in, and see if there are some already existing linkages that we can build on. That's all I wanted to say. There are some links here, and the slides will be available after the fact. So there are some links that you can explore, but also please feel free to shoot me an email.
Thanks, Ilya. You did a wonderful job. You had a lot of information. I should say, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
So let's try this once more. Did that work?
I can hear you.
Okay, here we go. Sorry about that. So, Ilya, thanks very much. You had lots of information, and you did a great job giving us a nice overview, and I'm pretty sure you're going to get some emails. I'll remind everybody that the slides are already available on the CLUIN website. A couple questions did come through, and I think one of them is answered in your reference slide here. Someone wanted to know if the SWAV tool was available for open access. So could anybody utilize that tool and put their own data in?
Yes, with a caveat. So this project is in active development. We have an open source version that we'll be happy to share with you. But features are being constantly edited. It's a two-year project funded by NSF. We're only after year one. So we haven't really been very religious about dumping the most recent version into GitHub. Get in touch with me. We'll work something out.
Okay, great. Also, there was a question about the standards for the water data using mm-hmm. Water ML 2.0. Does it include standards for water quality data?
Oh, very good question. So Water ML 2 Part 1 specifically focused on time series encoding, so not that much on water quality. Water ML 2 Part 2 focused on rating curves. Water ML Part 3 will be water quality. So we're currently working on towards a water quality standard that would get to eventual approval by OGC. There is a best practice paper that is now published. That is the first step towards the standard. And the next step is we're going to have an interoperability experiment that will allow us to see how we can use WaterML principles and WaterML-based schema to exchange information between EPA and some other water quality sources. So EPA and USGS are interested. If you are interested in being part of it, again, get in touch with me. I'm co-chair of the hydrology domain working group. We are in the process of discussing how to set up that experiment.
Okay, and you mentioned a publication describing the standards. Is that included in this reference list? And if it's not, would you mind providing that with the material?
Oh, yeah, sure. That's very simple. You just Google WaterML2. It's been published as a standard already, so it's all there.
Okay, great. The other question that's come through is obviously what you presented. You had a lot of detail and a lot of food for thought. And in response to that, the question is sort of, you know, looks very complicated, and it has the question asker thinking about how the Department of Homeland Security was supposed to integrate all the security agencies. But the thing that came about was a lot of these turf battles about integration. And so the question that this person has is, it seems it's very complex, And do you think, in your opinion, sort of your experience with working with these kinds of things, is it really the human constraint?
Yes. I think I try to emphasize that indeed the human dimension is more important than any technical solutions. If you can have a brilliant system, but if people don't talk to each other, it's not going to work. Build it and they will come. That, you know, we've all been through that. There's no recipe for solution here. It's just a very, I would say, tedious, careful, exciting engagement process that project needs to work on, have workshops, convince people that it works, show examples that demonstrate that these things indeed work and data can be efficiently integrated and duplication can be avoided. How it works in the defense homeland security domain, I don't have an answer. I just don't have expertise. It would be very interesting.
Comparing how it was difficult to do that, and was the difficulty just because it was difficult to integrate, or is it just because there was a human constraint? And I think your answer is that people just have to work together with this. I believe that Chaitan has joined us now.
Yes, hi, this is Jatin Baru here. Can you all hear me?
We sure can. What I'll do is, if you guys still have questions, please put them to the Q&A pod. Those questions that we can't get to at the end of the webinar, we will disperse them to the speakers and have them respond to you. So Chaitan, thank you for joining us, especially since you had yourself a couple unexpected events this afternoon.
Right.
So I'll introduce you. So Chaitan Baru is currently on assignment as Senior Advisor for Data Science in the Computer and Information Science and Engineering Directorate at the National Science Foundation. Chaitan is a distinguished scientist and Associate Director of Data Initiatives at the San Diego Supercomputer Center, USC San Diego, where he works on applied and applications-oriented research problems related to data management and data analytics. He has participated in a number of data cyber infrastructure initiatives, including a role as principal investigator of the Open Topography Project, cyber infrastructure lead for the Tropical Ecology Assessment and Monitoring Network, and the project director of the Geoscience Network, just to name a few. Prior to joining the San Diego Supercomputer Center in 1996, Baru was at IBM, where he led one of the development teams for the DB2 Parallel Edition version, and at the University of Michigan, where he served on the faculty of the Electrical Engineering and Computer Science Department. He received his Bachelor of Technology in Electronics Engineering from the Indian Institute of Technology, Madras, and Master's in PhD in Electrical Engineering from the University of Florida in Gainesville. So, Chaitan, I thank you for joining us and altering your schedule, and we look forward to hearing a little bit about the NSF initiatives on big data.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for that introduction. I felt like my life was passing in front of me. First I want to apologize for sort of switching the agenda around. The boss called a meeting, so we all had to be there. And I actually caught the last question that you had asked, and interestingly enough, in the meeting I just came from, one of the discussions was about the social aspects of technology. I guess not just in data integration, but, you know, this whole thing we call cyber infrastructure in general. There's a big issue, and the computer science director at NSF is aware that the social aspects of not just embedding all these technologies in the domains where they're supposed to be used, but of course the impact of technologies, especially when we talk about things like artificial intelligence and robotics and so on. So I think that's a very important aspect, and they probably, I may not specifically talk about the programs. I think I have some references in my slides, but I think probably you'll see more and more of this kind of emphasis, whereas we are developing technology, we're also worrying about the uptake of these things and the social issues. Okay, so I'll go through as quickly as I can through these slides and see if we can leave some time for questions. Okay, so I think I have control of the slide here. So you're all seeing the advance of the slide, right?
Yep.
Okay. So what I'm going to say here, just to set the stage, is from the perspective of NSF, which hopefully most of you, maybe all of you know, is essentially, I guess, the only agency in the government that's purely here for funding curiosity-driven basic research. And since this is NIEHS and NIH in general, just to be clear that there is no concept of intramural and extramural at NSF. There's nothing we do intramurally. All we do is fund research that others do. So that's the perspective in which from which we come into this. One useful diagram, one way of looking at, having said that, there are obviously a lot of aspects to the research that goes on and that NSF cares about and funds. So one good way of looking at that is this quadrant diagram, where one quadrant of it is the foundational research, which certainly folks who interact and deal with NSF know that NSF is the place for doing or for getting funded on basic research and things of that nature. But of course, in support of all the research, and as you all know now in the topic of this discussion, increasingly we are becoming much more data intensive, data driven, and also compute intensive. So there is a infrastructure aspect to the research. And so the other quadrant is cyber infrastructure, which is really funding the cyber aspects of whatever is needed to support that basic research. The third quadrant then is, and when you have that, you have all these new technologies coming in and new things that need to be learned. And so we look at how do you support the education and workforce in terms of, how do you support the students and the workforce in terms of their education and training in these new areas. And finally, one of the areas that we are increasingly more interested in, and I think again bears on this question of data integration and multidisciplinary data integration, is building collaborations and communities. And I think, again, that last question that I caught sort of alludes to that, which is that when you're talking about multidisciplinary, the collaborative aspect, the social dimensions, is a big part of it. And we certainly have some programs and some new ones as well that touch upon that. And I'll talk a little bit on that. And all of this is in the context of policy frameworks. In our case, the kinds of policies that NSF is interested in is related to open data, which is a government-wide issue, but also things like policies for putting out publications, making them publicly accessible, putting out data, making the data publicly accessible. And so what are the NSF has this concept of a data management plan, just like NIH has. So when you do your research, you have to say something about the disposition of the data in the software, what happens to it at the end of the research. But so far, we have not really sort of closed the loop on that. So increasingly, we're beginning to look at, well, let's see what people have actually done in terms of, you know, what they've said that they're going to do as managing data and what they're able to do, really. And this is not in any way, not necessarily to point fingers, but to really see if there are some shortcomings out there and there's a need for more support to the community so that they can, in fact, publish their data and so on. Okay, so I wanted to actually first start off, I'm not sure how readable this is. On my screen it looks pretty okay, but this is a list of workshops, and it's a small type font in terms of there are titles of the workshops and who's running it, but I wanted to start off with this list because this actually reflects one of the latest initiatives that NSF has put out, and I suspect I didn't hear Ilya's presentation, but he and I happen to be from the same institution, so I know a lot of what he does. And I suspect he might have touched on some of these with things like the Critical Zone Observatory and the and the hydrology and hydrologic information system projects. This new initiative is called INFUSE, and that is innovation at the nexus of food, energy, and water systems. It's cross-cutting at NSF. NSF has seven directorates, and this involves almost all the directorates, certainly geosciences, engineering, social science, computer science. And it's basically what the name indicates, right? It's looking at this issue of these interdependent systems at a very high level. So it's a very high-level systems view of how all these things interact. And if you look at sort of the fourth one down the line, there was a recent workshop that I was able to sit in on where they were talking about data science approaches and challenges to enhance the understanding of interactions between water, energy, and food systems. And actually, some of these issues came up there, some of the data interoperability issues. And in some sense, the punchline for what I'm going to be saying today, which came up at the workshop, is the first thing really is to understand what the application is. So, you know, what is the driving, which, you know, is a little bit, it sounds easy, but, you know, involves some real understanding of what are the stakeholders really after, what are the existing capabilities, what are the things that can take us from where we are today to the thing that we want to achieve, and so on. So, which requires a lot of conversation between the technical folks, maybe computer scientists on one side, and the applications folks on the other side. The other thing that came up in this meeting was the need for a common language. So you can call it semantics at the level of data and what the meaning of the data is, but also just language in terms of when scientists are talking to each other. You know, somebody may be saying agriculture, but they may actually mean something quite different than what the other person is understanding. There's a discussion of, I think there was somebody there from USDA who talked about tracking how much water is consumed in dairy products. So starting from, you know, the cow, how much water is involved in taking care of cattle, and all the way down the process. And even in that, they were missing some parts of the equation of, you know, the inputs and the outputs for water. So getting a full understanding of what we really want to do, I think, is a key thing. And INFUSE is that much more complex because this is addressing a really big issue. So if we zoom down to this topic of data integration, it's a long and ongoing topic in computer science. It's kind of like a holy grail because it's such a complex issue. Actually, if you ask me now, I would say it's not maybe as technological as it is social. In fact, I might even say it's more social than technological. I think the computer science community has been at it for a while, and there are a lot of different techniques you could use. There's pretty reasonable understanding of semi-structured data models and structured data, and also bringing together all sorts of different data in a very, let's call it mechanical or technical way. I think what's really hampering us now is the contextual information and the semantics of it. And that gets harder and harder. Some of that is technology, but a lot of that is what I said before, really understanding the needs of the applications and understanding the languages. So in SCISE, which is the Computer Science Directorate here, there has been a long-standing program called III, Information Integration and Informatics. So if you go to the NSF website, there's an easy way to search all the awards that we've made. So you can go in there and put III as the name of a program. There's one of the boxes you can fill, and you can see a lot of the kind of research that's funded through here. More recently, there are other programs which are cross-directorate, of course, involves more than one directorate, one of which is called DIBS, which is the Data Infrastructure Building Blocks. And as the name implies, that's a little bit more on the cyber infrastructure side, and that's trying to build capacity in the community so that they can share data, maybe share interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary data, so there may be some integration involved. But that's the thrust of that program. I mentioned INFUSE. There are other multi-directorate programs which might involve two or three or fewer than all of the directorates of the foundation. one of which is EarthCube, and Ilya may have mentioned that, which involves the earth sciences, that's in our geoscience directorate, and computer advanced cyber infrastructure in our computer science directorate. And they're definitely looking at interoperability and data integration across multiple geoscience disciplines, but also overflowing into ecology and some of the biology aspects. On the math and physical science side, there is this program called DMRF, which is designing materials. And so it involves material science, chemistry, and some of those related disciplines. And again, they have data integration challenges there. So if we look at this data enterprise, and this is active discussion at NSF right now, is, and as we look at what are the things we should be funding and funding directions that we should be looking at in the next few years, the time range of, say, 3 to 5 to 6 years. we've been having a lot of discussions about the whole data problem, and one way to sort of encapsulate that is to think of the past where things were a little simpler, and this is, a lot of this applies in the research context and probably flows over to other areas of society as well. But certainly in research, it used to be the case that, you know, you produce your data, you do the analysis, you publish something about it, and the story ended there. We have moved from that, and already in the current world, we do realize that there are a lot of other issues involved with data. There are the producers of data. There are people who run data archives so others can use it, so there are providers. There's, of course, the end users of it. There are folks who do curation and whose job is to sort of take care of the data in the long term. They may have had nothing to do with the production other than understanding the processes that were involved in production, producing the data, but their job is to actually curate it and look at how the data is being used and how it can be made useful for other applications. And there are all these emerging policies, as I mentioned, on data management, data citation, public access, and so on. So the future programs like INFUSE indicate that. I think NIEHS is probably full of these kind of issues. Involves really solving these grand complex problems using data from multiple disciplines. So we are looking at new methods and algorithms and technologies for data-intensive science and data management, integration of diverse distributed data, increased understanding of this notion of data quality and reliability, and this is especially important as data start being reused and repurposed. So somebody may have collected data for one reason, but an entirely different community or another scientist from a different angle may be consuming that, and they may have more of a need for a more formal description of what is the quality and reliability of this data. If data is produced by one community and consumed by the same community, that's not so much of an issue because within the community, people have sort of an understanding of how things operate. But the moment you start crossing community and disciplinary or even subdisciplinary boundaries, these start becoming issues, and you need really more formal methods of describing these things. And of course, certainly as agencies, but any institution that's engaged in this has to worry about what is the sustainable model going forward. There's more and more data coming. There's not necessarily more and more data, money for research, for R&D. So how do you manage that? Who governs this thing? Who, when you have archives, who decides what goes in? What? At some point, you also have to decide what has to come out. Deaccessioning and removing data becomes important, especially when you're constrained on your resources. You can't just keep on adding data all the time. And then how do we develop methods for saying that, okay, that's a reliable result, especially when we start talking about big data and streaming data, where it's not simple to say that, oh, I'll just keep this data set around, we can reproduce this. Now, data may be changing and evolving rapidly. You might be doing statistical methods and analysis on very large data. So how do you reproduce those things? And then the final challenge is, you know, how do we train the next generation of kids who are coming through? So I just wanted, so a big issue, as I said right in the beginning, is how do we create these sustained multidisciplinary engagements? One idea that we have, that we've just launched a small program at NSF it's a very different program that NSF normally funds, is this thing that we call the NSF Big Data Regional Innovation Hubs, or BD Hubs. And actually, four of these have been funded around the country, and that's because they're meant to be regional focused, which is an interesting concept for NSF. And there's actually a meeting coming up on November 3rd to 5th here in Arlington of these four regions, folks from these four regions coming together and talking about the whole idea of, let's see, go to the next slide. Sorry, there's some animation here, so let me click through that. The whole idea of creating these hubs was to try and jumpstart some collaborations that are not just multidisciplinary, but they are multisectoral, so academia, industry, and government, addressing some of these, any of these complex problems that we want to address have that complexity that they have so many different stakeholders. So we wanted to set up these hubs as ways by which you could jumpstart some of these ideas early in the game, which may then eventually lead to groups getting together to submit full proposals to NSF. So if you talk to anyone who's involved in these multidisciplinary, lot of stakeholder type collaborations, everyone will tell you that it takes a while for the whole thing just to sort of gel together before you can actually start doing productive research. So many times in academia and maybe elsewhere, people will come together to write a large proposal to get funded, and then they start sort of thinking, okay, now what do, now that we've got the money? And so you lose an year or two just in doing that. Or they may think they know what they're going to do, and then it takes a year or two to understand, oh, that's not really what we needed to do. We need to do something else. So we are hoping that by funding these kind of regional hub idea, some of that would be done ahead of time. So people get together, start talking, and start focusing down on problems that they really want to solve. So by the time they get to putting together a proposal, they have a much better sense. I don't have much time, so I'm not going to go into details of all of this, but that gives you an idea. There are four regions that we sort of divided the country into. There's the West, the Midwest, Northeast, and South. I think this slide shows you the institutions involved in, I don't want to call it leading, but I would call it coordinating the hub, because it's really all about collaboration and coordination. So the West Hub is coordinated through University of Washington, UC Berkeley, and UC San Diego. The Midwest is University of Illinois. The Northeast is Columbia University. And the South is, RENC is actually University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Georgia Tech. But each of those, when they put their proposals together, had literally hundreds of collaborators that were listed. And so they're all working together in trying to identify sort of what are the problems of interest to that particular region and what are the resources available in the region in terms of data resources, computational resources, expertise, and so on. Again, a lot of topics came across. You know, we had meetings in each of these regions, and in those discussions there were a lot of ideas were surfaced as to the kinds of problems that they would like to work on. There were some common themes. Environment and the health was certainly one of the themes, and personalized health. Smart cities was another common theme across all the areas, and so on and so forth. I think you'll have these slides, so you can certainly go through them and feel free to contact me, and I can put you in touch with the right folks if you're interested in this. And let me say right now that if someone from NIEHS, I'm not sure if Alan Deary is on these calls, but Alan and I co-chair the Big Data Senior Steering Group under NITRED, and Alan certainly knows about this. So if anyone from NIEHS is interested in attending our meeting November 3rd to 5th, let us know and we'll see. Maybe we can accommodate you. So the meeting is coming up, as I say. And the subsequent follow-on to the hubs is the notion of spokes, which is the same concept of building multidisciplinary collaborations, but now focused on specific topics, and those would be the spokes. The last thing I want to mention is another thing that we've been interested in is how do you, essentially making the connection between the data science community that's out there and the data sets and problems that need to be addressed or analyzed and problems to be solved. So actually this is an initiative again from the White House OSTP to try and use the data science meetup groups that are across the country to see if we can leverage those folks to help address some of these issues. So we had a meeting of a number of data science meetup groups. Some of them, for example, the one in San Francisco has a membership of 8,000 members. Each of these big cities have data science meetup groups with 2,000-3,000 membership. So if you bring together these folks, and we had a meeting of folks who are representing about 20 to 25,000 membership. And so they wanted to have a face-to-face meeting of the coordinators of these groups. So that's about 20 people or so. And that meeting is going to happen right after our Hubs meeting, and that will be November 5th and 6th, also right here in Ballston, near NSF in Arlington. And there's an open part of that meeting and the closed part, so you'll be able to look at the webinar or participate somehow in the open part. So I'll leave it at that. So we do fund some activities through NSF looking, which are relevant to the data integration problem. I've been discussing with groups like CoData, there are the World Data Centers, and a bunch of other organizations of this type who care a lot about data curation, stewardship, and eventually integration. And one of the things that I've heard from them is this notion of a soft architecture, which is really talking about the idea of governance. And if you talk about data integration standards, there has to be some way by which we can convince people to use these standards. So there's a carrot and a stick, and the carrot works much better. So how do you get people to sort of adhere to some of these standards that the communities may be coming up with? So that's a big issue. We fund a group called RDA, the Research Data Alliance, that's trying to do these kind of interoperability experiments. And coming up in 2016 is this thing called the International Data Week. You might want to be aware of it and may want to be involved, and a lot of these organizations are participating in that. So I think I'm going to end with this. Some of our challenges are how do we, from our point of view, NSF, how do we provide our community, which is the research community, more access to real data so that they can actually work on doing analytics on real data and see the problems that exist with real data? How do we sustain platforms for data analysis, so data analytics? And how do we deal with this language issue, the semantics issue? I think I'm done.
Thanks, Chaitan. That was great. We have a time for one quick question, and it kind of ties. Can you hear me okay? I should ask that first.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. I've been having some trouble with this unmute button over here. You mentioned that you had these four big data hubs. And one of the questions kind of ties into this, and it's the idea if there's a, do you know if there's a place for, or if there's there's actually one in existence, a GitHub for sharing data across platforms?
Yes, and the question is?
So the question is there a GitHub for this, or is there something in development that you know of?
Okay. Well, actually, that's a good question. In fact, I don't know of one that's under development, though somebody else might on the call might know this. But one of the ideas somebody mentioned is a GitHub kind of idea for data. So I think these hubs that we are talking about are sort of essentially organizational entities. But one of the things that they're some of them I know are interested in, probably all of them would be interested in, is what kind of infrastructure can they create to provide persistent, I don't know if it's sustained or not, but at least persistent infrastructure for sharing data and, in fact, sharing data science workflows. And so when you talk about a data science workflow, it's data through multiple steps of the process, and then this idea of GitHub kind of idea comes up, is how do I store and share versions of my data and versions of my workflow. So I don't know of anyone developing that, but I actually think that's a great idea to develop something like that.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. The other thing, you mentioned that there was a open component to the meeting of the data science meet groups. That's at the beginning of November. Would you be able just to send us a link to that, and we can make sure we send it out to the group?
I think the best way to deal with that is, so I'm not sure which your group is, but so if someone from NIEHS wants to contact me, I'll put you in touch with the person who's organizing that.
Okay.
And then I will let her figure out. There's a lot of interest in that meeting, so, and I think it's a limited space that we have, and she has a very specific agenda for how she wants to run the meeting.
Okay.
All I'll say is, I mean, it has received a lot of interest, so Tom Khalil from the OSTP in the White House is going to open the meeting, and our lunch speaker is going to be DJ Partle, who's the chief data scientist for the U.S., I guess. So it's going to be, there's a lot of interest in getting these data science meetup groups more engaged. But let me give you the name of the person, and then you can figure out what's the best thing to do.
That's great, thank you. And I think from both of these presentations, I think it's clear that there's a lot of usefulness for sharing data, and there's also a lot of work to be done. And I think one of the keys is just coordination and talking to each other and working together. So we look forward to keeping in touch with you and hearing more about what NSF is doing as you guys move along, and we'd like to do the same with you all. With that, we are right at the time of the end of the webinar, so if everyone will just join me in thanking Ilya and Chaitan for great presentations today. And I will just conclude just by quickly finishing off some quick housekeeping items and remind everyone, if you have any questions that didn't get answered, please feel free to send us an email and we can send the questions to Chaitan and Ilya and have those answered for you. So I just want to make sure that everyone is aware of the related URLs pods, which contains the seminar resources and seminar feedback links. On the seminar resources page, we've assembled resources directly applicable for today's topic. This will stay with the seminar indefinitely, so you can access this after the presentation. We place these seminars in the archive with a soundtrack, as I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the presentation. So in the near future, you're going to be you'll receive an email to let you know that that's available and you can access it. And also, if you could just consider filling out the online feedback form. We like to receive the comments. We like to make these the best that they can be, so we can only do that if we get your feedback. I'd also like to remind participants of the various ways to stay connected to ensure you don't miss any webinars. For more information on EPA's CLUIN webinars, please refer to the CLUIN.org website. There's a CLUIN there's an EPA Cleanup Technology Facebook page. They are on Twitter, and you can join the LinkedIn group. And please, we encourage you to join the SRP Risky Learning Webinars webpage, and we, SRP, also has Twitter as well. And just to let you know, we don't have formal documentations for continuing education credits, PDHs or related credits for internet seminars, and we don't track our participation in a way that allows us to confirm that you were present for the entire event, but we do know that many participants use the seminars to help them meet their continuing education needs. So if you need confirmation that you participated, please visit the website that's at the top of the slide, www.cluin.org, /training/records. And then we ask you to join us next week. We'd like to encourage you to join us for this third session of the series. In the third session, speakers will include data science experts who are developing tools through NIH-funded grants to establish infrastructure to coordinate data and develop sophisticated approaches to utilize big data to advance our understanding of health and of human health and disease. Susan Teitelbaum and Patricia Kovich from Mount Sinai and Deborah McGinnis from the Rensselaer Polytech Institute will discuss their previous work related to knowledge integration and developing data infrastructure. They'll also discuss the recent NIHS Children's Health Exposure Analysis Resource, or CHEER. Some of you might have heard of that. It's a data repository analysis and science center award, which addresses methodologies for combining data from a wide range of environmental health studies. We will also have Gregory Krupper from the University of Pittsburgh, who will discuss the Center for Causal Discovery, and who's inaugural member of the NIH Big Data to Knowledge Consortium. Krupper leads the center, which is developing and making available the algorithms, software, and system architecture needed by biomedical scientists seeking to discover causal relationships using large and diverse data sets. Registration should be available very soon on the CLUIN website, and we'll also be sending it through our Risky Learning listserv through SRP, and we hope you're able to attend. And I'm sorry we don't have time for additional questions, but I feel like we had a lot of great information that was presented to us, and I'd like to thank our presenters, Ilya and Chaitan, for their time preparing and for sharing their presentations with us today, and especially for Ilya for revamping your presentation, and Chaitan for also coming in at the heels of a meeting. So this concludes today's presentation, and thanks so much for your presentation. I think that's all I had, Sarah, I don't think, or Sarah Jean, I don't think that there's anything else, and I do see that people did hang on to the end, so I appreciate that, and we hope that you'll be able to join us next week for our third webinar in this session. So thanks again, and everyone have a great day.